The story of the three kings is something that is part of our Christmas culture. Today, what I'd like to reflect on with you is the issue of the dynamic between Herod's reaction and the king's behavior, because there is a relationship between the two reactions. First of all, the three kings and their motivation, and Herod and his desire to make sure that the child is dead. First of all, let's start thinking about the three kings. And by the way, we don't know if there were three. The number three has been arrived at because they gave him, the scripture says, three kinds of gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And so they're presuming one person. The Bible doesn't say how many there were. But it doesn't matter. The fact is, these three magi, these three kings, are from a foreign land. Now, the Catholic Church is very aware of the meaning, first of all, behind the fact that these are foreigners. Remember, in the consciousness of the Jewish people at that time, the fact that they were the chosen people was interpreted in a very exclusionary way. Meaning, and they don't no longer, Jews no longer interpret it that way. But in those days, it was interpreted as God has chosen us and he has not chosen you. So that we are the chosen people. Even Jesus, if you remember, at one time he has a confrontation with some of the scribes and Pharisees. And he says to them, you think that you are okay. So I'm paraphrasing here. You think you're okay because you say Abraham is our father. And then, getting angry, Jesus says, I tell you, God can raise sons and daughters to Abraham from these very stones. And he goes on to say, the persons who believe in me, those are the true sons of Abraham, sons and daughters of Abraham. But suffice it to say that the interpretation at that time was that the relationship with God was exclusive to Israel. And Israel was interpreted as blood. The blood of I have Jewish blood in me. Therefore, I'm chosen people. Now, here is the three kings. These are pagans. They are pagans. They're in no way Jewish people. And somehow, God uses what... Let me just back off here. In those days, there was not a difference yet. They didn't have the whole notion of the difference between astrology and astronomy. Okay? That is a scientific difference that would only come about later. And so what God does is, and this is what's very interesting is here, he does not see the blood of these three guys. He sees their sincerity. And when he sees their sincerity, he uses even a form of knowledge that we know is really not accurate at all. I mean, if you follow your horoscope in the paper, you're wasting your time, because we know that it doesn't work like that. But my sense is that if you are a person who is seeking God with a sincere heart, God will somehow use what you are, the method that you are seeking Him through, to get you where you need to be. He will get you there. The science may not be right, but He will use it to get you spiritually where He needs you to go. God never is not limited by, well, this is scientifically accurate or not accurate. He can get you where He needs you to go. So what He does is He sees that these three guys are looking for something. They are sincerely saying, I mean, think about what it would be. They are searching the scriptures that don't even belong to them. They are seeking in books that are written for another people. They are seeking, and the fact that they come to the understanding of a Messiah, it tells you that they were seeking, they weren't satisfied. As far as we know, these were pretty wealthy guys. They could have just sat back wherever they were. They had probably servants, and they could have sat back and enjoyed the good life where they were. Instead, they start studying because, and this is a hunch that I have, not any historical data, but what would be the motivation for them to study, to look for what? They weren't even aware that there was going to be a Messiah. So the question that you have to ask yourself is, what were they looking for? What is it that prompts somebody to open up volumes of another people's scriptures and even know what questions to ask? And my hunch is that they understood that something was missing in their lives. In the ancient world, even the books of the Old Testament tell you that they were very aware of the emptiness of human life. If you ever want to read some of the reflections like that, the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, the book that starts, and it says, vanity of vanity, says the teacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit does a man get from working all of his days under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, and then the man dies, and everything he worked for is given to somebody else. And so in the ancient world, there was a general sense that something was missing in human life. And that's something that every human being has experienced at one time or another. The older you get, now some of the younger people may not get it. And the reason I don't think, I think a lot of times younger people don't get it, because they're still sort of entranced by the merry-go-round. That goes back to a story of when I was going to say a mass for an all-school one time. I asked the kids how many kids had been on a merry-go-round, and the whole school almost everybody had been on a merry-go-round, and they asked them, how many of you would like to live on a merry-go-round permanently? And they said, and then only the little kids, the kindergartners and the pre-K, raised their hands. And when I went and asked the eighth graders, why not? The eighth graders said, because it's boring. It doesn't go anywhere. And after a while, the music drives you nuts. Okay? And the little kids, I asked them, well, why do you want it? Oh, it's so much fun. The horsies are going up and down and, you know, the whole thing. So my hunch is that the younger you are, and I want you to understand, if any of you are young here and get it, I'm not insulting you. I'm just saying that generally, the younger you are, the less you get it. And the older you are, the more you get it. That's why I'm so wise. Because I'm old. But here's the point. Everybody gets that something is wrong. Something is wrong with the human condition. And they knew it. And they started looking. The first quality that I think charms God. You are asking questions with a sincerity of heart. I think that that truly honors God. When you have questions and you ask them and you seek, that's why Jesus would say, ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. Well, these three guys, wealthy as they were, they weren't satisfied with life the way that it was. And so they undertook, when they found the evidence, they undertook a trip. And by the way, we always romanticize the trip. I mean, if you look at that, didn't that look pretty? I mean, the three wise men and the beautiful little camels, and they're crossing and they're being led by the star. Folks, historically, that is not true. The camels are smelly. Okay? The desert was full of marauders and thieves. Camping out in the desert was no fun. It was dangerous. And now, look at what they're doing. They could have stayed home. They could have relaxed. They could have pursued happiness, as our Declaration of Independence says, which I disagree with. They could have pursued happiness. Why did they need to go out and pursue truth? Because that's what they're doing. They're pursuing truth instead of happiness. And so they go out and they start looking. And I think that literally charms God. Now, they get to this place where King Herod is. Now, what's the reaction of Herod? Herod is really close to where the star is going to point. And yet, the Bible says he and all of Jerusalem were really troubled by this. Why? Why? Because you see, Herod and whoever all of Jerusalem is are not looking for the truth. They are looking for happiness. They are happy. They're in control. And if they're in control and they are happy, they don't want to lose control. And so the moment you tell them that there is a source of authority that is being revealed independent of the authority of the state that Herod commands, and the structure of temple worship Because everybody is feeding at the trough of the way religion is at that time. And the government, everybody got a nice little arrangement going. And what Herod doesn't want is for that sort of to be upset. And so what he does is he decides that he's got to figure out a way to lie in order to get information so that he can neutralize the new authority. Because the authority is a newborn king. And that's a direct challenge to him. Okay? It doesn't matter that it's going to be a baby. It matters that there's a rival. And he doesn't want that. Now, notice the dynamic. The dynamic is between two different sources of authority. The authority of Herod is the authority of man, human beings, with God on the outside. And what any time you have that, depending on how entrenched it is, they have to, whoever it is, has to eliminate all competition. All. That's what's known as totalitarianism. Totalitarianism is the philosophy where the state is the total authority and it dictates what is right and what is wrong. And all other authority would be eliminated. One of the interesting things that I've been studying, I enjoy studying, and I don't know why, but I'm studying a lot of what happened during World War II in Germany, and also Stalin, Mussolini, and then the communist takeovers and all this stuff. But what's interesting is this, one of the things. When Hitler invaded Poland in 1941, when he invaded Poland, the instructions that he gave was that the first things was not necessarily first to get rid of the Jews, to make sure that the Catholic priests were all rounded up and put in concentration camps. In the first few months of Hitler's occupation of Poland, over 10,000 Catholic priests were put in concentration camps. Why? Because of the same thing Herod was worried about. Because Hitler knew that the only source of authority that could bypass him was if people listened to what God was saying to them through the church. And he did not want that. And as a matter of fact, if you go and think about all the 20th century totalitarianism, Stalin, Mao Zedong, Hitler, Mussolini, and Pol Pot, and others, what is the first thing that they do? They shut down the churches. And they shut them down. Why? Because it's an alternate source of authority on morality. And they want to be the only source of authority on morality. Herod had the same idea. I got to shut this down. And so much so that when the three wise men did not come back, if you remember what he did, he called on his soldiers to go to where Jesus was supposed to be and kill all the kids, all the boys, 3 years old and younger. It's called the Holy Innocents, the Massacre of the Holy Innocents. Notice his behavior. It's kind of like a mini genocide because he wanted to make sure that his own authority wasn't threatened. Notice the dynamics. It's either whose authority is going to govern how people live. You know, the great philosopher Aristotle gave a very, very simple definition of what politics is. I know that a lot of us, you know, think politics and you immediately get cynical. I don't disagree with you. You know, most politicians way stretch the truth. But politics are essential. Why? Because it answers one central question. How ought we to live together? We have to live together. We live in cities. We live next door to each other. We live in apartments. We drive common roads. We eat at restaurants. We gather together. What are the rules? And who will make the morality and the rules that will govern living together? That's what politics is. And we're used to, we think, oh, living in America, this is normal. Folks, normal can get very weird really fast. Really fast. One of the books that I finished reading a few months ago was called The Nazi Conscience. And one of the fascinating thing about the Nazi conscience is how slowly, over a period of almost 7-8 years, the Nazis and Hitler were able to slowly begin to picture the Jews as culpable for all of the evils that had befallen Germany, to the point that the people were going along. They didn't necessarily, all of them didn't necessarily know about the Holocaust and what was going on. But none of them, or not, I shouldn't say none of them, the majority were okay with making sure that they didn't do business with Jews, that they ostracized Jews. And of course, little by little, it became what was at first horrible became, oh, well, we can tolerate it. And then what was tolerable, well, we can accept it. And then once it was accepted, well, I guess it's the way things are. And it slowly catches up to you. Now, the important thing here is that what is happening in the gospel between the dynamic of Herod and the three kings is a dynamic that happens in every single age, because you always have the conflict about where and where who will tell us the truth that we must live by together. Who will tell us the truth that we must live by? Will it be the state? Will the state, depending on which, you know, which iteration of the state, which kind, you know, if you're Stalin, you're saying you're anti the people. We want to establish the people's government so that we own all things. And anybody who's not on board with that, we need to break a few eggs in order to make an omelet. And Stalin killed millions of people. Or if you're Hitler, want to make the super race. And so you make things right and wrong depending on what you accept as who is giving you the truth. I was just reading an interview with a Nazi doctor that was, another doctor said, how can you be performing experiments when you're on people, when you're violating your Hippocratic oath, the oath to do no harm? And you know what the Nazi doctor said? But they're Jews. And if they're Jews, that means that I am doing a service to Germany by not just killing them, but getting some benefit out of their bodies before we kill them. That was his justification for, I'm living up to the Hippocratic Oath. They're dead anyway. But you see, this was an educated man. This is a man who had been slowly trained in his mind to think, yes, it is, it's right. The Jews are the whole problem, and we need to get rid of them. And you go on with different ideologies. Herod had his own, and he was convinced that he was right. Now compare that, the source of the truth that Herod has, to these three guys. These three guys are listening to something higher. Something's got to be bigger than just our customs, our state, which is telling us what's right and what's wrong. They start looking, and they start looking for the truth that comes from the one who made us. And that's where God is charmed, and he shows them the way to the truth, even using astrology. Now, what's this? Whenever I preach, I always remember Rick Warren, the guy who wrote The Purpose-Driven Life. Right, one time he said, any good sermon should have three qualities: what, so what, and now what. What, so what, now what. So, I've told you the what and so what. But now what? How do we interpret this? What's happening to us in this country is exactly what happened to those people, and to what happened to Germans, to Russians, what happened to Italians, what happened to lots of people in different places in the world. Where do you give weight, weight, to the source of where your truth comes from? Is something right because the state says it's legal? Is something right because everybody does it? Where are you getting the source of the truth that tells you the difference between what is right and what is wrong? And you and I have that same problem today as they did, as the people in the 40s did. We all have the same problem. There's always a competition between the power of the world and the power of God. And when they come into contact, there's normally an explosion. You know what the explosion, the chief explosion was in the entire history of humankind? Right behind me. The crucifixion. When God became human, the whole, and I'm going to say it, the whole damn thing exploded. And what you're seeing is the fruit of the explosion right behind me. You know what I always have this image of the finger of God. And this is just an image, okay? Didn't happen. I always have this image of the finger of God coming down from heaven and going to the top of a semi almost active volcano. And here's the mountain, and the finger of God comes down like this and just scratches it a little bit. And all of a sudden, the pressure that is underneath explodes. And the explosion is the contact between the pressure of the volcano and the finger of God. And you know what that looks like? The cross. The cross is the explosion when the contact between the two, the God of the universe and the world, come together. It literally, bam, explodes. And so the question for us is, more and more, and I don't think it's going to happen anytime all at once, but more and more, where is your authority that you guide your life coming from? Are you able to say, well, it's legal? I heard it, a good friend of mine say it. Well, you know, what's wrong with doing drugs? It's legal. Or what's wrong with, you know, having sex whenever I want? It's legal. Consenting adults. Where does your law come from? Does it come from the state? Or does it come from God? The reason that these three men are honored, even though they're not Jews, is because they understood where true authority comes from. And they allowed themselves to be guided through a horrendous journey through the desert to seek the truth. And they didn't choose to stay comfortable. Will you? Will I?